Okay, thank you. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. How you doing, Glenn?
Hi. How's it? Who's it?
This is Avery.
Oh, hi, Avery. How are you? Where are you?
I'm at home in the U.S.
Oh, and you're going to stay there for a couple of days?
I'm actually going to stay here for about 4 weeks.
Oh, wow, that would be nice.
This is your operator.
Yes, operator.
Hi. I'm just to let you know that I've already started the recording, so you can start your conference whenever you like.
No, we don't want the recording yet. Hello?
Yes? No, that's okay, then okay. I'll just take it over and then I'll record
You started when Mr. Jordan Buchanan gets on the line, please.
Okay. If you can just please press the star zero when he joins.
Will you ask him to do that, please? When you join him into the call, you just take him out for a moment.
Okay.
And you ask him to do that because he is the leader of the call. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Right, thanks. Hi, Avery.
Hi.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to be here.
Yes.
I realize how much time I have spent living in hotels. I mean, I've spent between the standard hotel I live in Sweden and other hotels, I've spent, you know, probably 8 months of the year in hotels.
Oh, good heavens. Must be nice to be home.
Yeah.
Did you get home safely? Was everything in order?
Yeah, I did.
Good. And you? Yes, very well, thanks. I took a week's leave afterwards. That was rather nice. But there's always so much to pick up afterwards. You say, oh, golly, perhaps I should have had my computer with me all the time. That's just very nice. We went to Peru.
Oh, never been there.
Ah, yes, it was wonderful. So, but there was no connectivity at all. Well, there's no wireless connectivity. There was in all these funny little places. You saw internet, speedy internet.
Milton, where are you going?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Jordan?
Milton.
Milton. Hi, Milton. Welcome.
How are you doing, Glenn?
Fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Oh, it's okay.
Well, Malcolm.
Are we...
We've got Avery on the line.
Hello, Avery.
Hello, Malcolm.
You having a good holiday season?
Good, I'm looking at Andre.
I haven't really started the holiday season yet, but it's good to be home.
Good.
Although I must admit, last night when I was sleeping, I had almost one of those lucid dreams about traveling and was treading over suitcases and where to store them.
Yeah.
It was very disturbing. You think it's funny? It was disturbing.
Who's just joined?
Jordan.
Jordan. Jordan, could you press star zero for the operator to tell her when to start recording, please?
Yes. That.
Thank you very much. Marilyn might be a little bit late.
Okay.
Her excuses if she is.
Your proposal that you did with Wendy that came out of San Paolo, is that formally on the table here now, or is it...
I don't know to what extent Marilyn proposals are being accepted, but hopefully if new proposals are being accepted, and I guess there's two of them in the line now, I hope it's formally on the table. I guess that's one of the things to find out about this.
Excuse me, the operator, Mr. Steve Metallis now joins.
Excuse me, Wendy Seltzer now joins.
So to answer your question, Milton, we do have a brief discussion of both of the new proposals on the agenda for today's call.
David Farris now joins.
We'll discuss how to treat them at that time.
Good. I'm sure you will skillfully handle it, as you always do, Jordan.
See how many proposals we can cram into one report, I'm sure.
How many proposals can dance on the head of a pin?
Exactly.
Although I'd be happy if all the other proposals were thrown out and Avery's was accepted.
Sure, I'm sure many people would be happy if their particular proposal was the one that was victorious.
We're all looking for a Christmas, a holiday gift, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Excuse me, Robin Gross, Nigelines.
Christmas tree. Why don't we just pass them all?
Sorry, who is that that joined last?
Robin Gross has joined.
Thank you, Robin.
Yeah, and Milton, I'd like to make one correction. It's Robin Wendy and my proposal. I just happen to be the one sending it in.
Good. See, the support is swelling. The
I was just the author of the email.
and I too would be happy to see it selected as a unique proposal.
Well, we're working towards a Christmas model of task force production here, and we think that everybody should be happy and everybody should get what they want.
Hi, it's Maria just joining.
Hello, it's Thomas just joined.
Hello, Maria. Hello. Okay, I want to start to actually, can I make sure we've correctly got everyone on the call, Glenn? Could you tell me who we've got right now?
Yes, shall I tell them to start, Jordan?
Why don't you make sure that we know who's on the call and I'll...
Okay, let me go through who's on the call. Avery Doria from the nominating committee. Milton Mueller from the NCUC. Jordan, you're the chair. Steve Metellis, ITC. Wendy Seltzer, ALAC. David Ferris, DC. Robin Gross, IPC, who is a new member to the task force.
NCUC.
Sorry. Maria.
Thank you.
Maria and Tom Keller. Have I missed anyone?
David
Maher.
And Glenn, it's Marilyn I'm on, but I'll go back on mute.
Thank you, Marilyn. Anybody else?
Okay, great. And I will note that this call is now being recorded, so if you don't like that, you should hang up. Maria had previously sent out an agenda, and I think that I'm mostly going to stick with that, but I'll recap it briefly in case anyone didn't see it. The agenda is first to talk about our remaining schedule, and from now until we complete our work, which we have tentatively slated for mid-February. Next topic would be to discuss and recap activities from Sao Paulo. For those of us that weren't here, if we have any particularly exciting insights coming out of the meetings. Third, to have a brief discussion of the two new proposals that we've had sent to the task force since our last call. And fourth, to have a brief discussion of the deliverables and how we plan to approach our remaining work items.
Jordan, it's Marilyn. I have a clarification question.
Sure, go ahead.
This is going to be very noisy, so I may need to wait until I get inside. I posted something, I posted comments that I made and a proposal that I do expect to put forward through the public comment period. I guess really I was thinking that we would talk about input that's received within the scope of our terms of reference. So I don't want to use the term proposal at this period in relation to the comments that I presented, although it may end up being a proposal.
So, well we can certainly, that's fine if you don't want to discuss it in that context. I think at the very least, Milton had raised a point earlier, which is what we're going to do with new proposals that we receive at this point, including the one that Aubrey had emailed to the list. At least the meta discussion of how we treat additional proposals going forward is probably...
Right, okay. If we're treating it that way, yes.
Okay, any other questions or comments about the agenda? Okay, let's start then. How quickly we can get through these items. First item on the agenda then is to discuss our timeline and schedule from this point out. In Sao Paulo, we had discussed having up to 6 more meetings, including this one. The goal being to conclude our work by the... the goal being to conclude our work no later than February 12th. That would give time for for our report to be, a final report to be concluded and to be transmitted to the council in time for them to consider at their call, at their next call on February 22nd. Once again, with the overall goal being that we had previously announced and the board had endorsed a general timeline of getting something actionable to the board in early 2007. So I think the only way that that is conceivably possible is to requires some council action as well, which I can't obviously make happen, but I think I'd like to at least make sure that we're getting a report out in time that, in theory at least, the board could get something in the earlier part of 2007. So to that end, we would have a call today, and then we would resume having calls on the 15th of January, and including up to a weekly schedule starting at that point. So that would allow for calls on the 15th, 22nd, and 29th of January, as well as the 5th and the 12th of February. And any work that we want to do, we would have to conduct between now and the 12th of February. So that's what we discussed in Sao Paulo. If there's any further discussion on this, I'd be glad to entertain it now, or otherwise we can just make a note that that's what our plan and timeline is.
Joy McMillan, for a question of clarification again.
Yeah.
Then, in our timeline, are we assuming that all consultation related to the GAC principles will be done at the council level?
Well, I guess to the extent it appears exceedingly unlikely that we would see the GAC principles by the time our work was, by the time we got to that February 12th date, I would assume that would have to be the case, yes.
Jordan, this is Steve. I had two questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
One, just to note that January 15th is a federal holiday in the United States.
What holiday?
That is a good point.
Martin Luther King Day.
And second, looking at the timetable Maria sent around, the public comment deadline is January 15th, and the constituency statements are due on that date. And then the next date is January 19th, staff prepares final task force report incorporating public comments. And then January 22nd, task force considers final task force report. So I guess I'm trying to understand what is expected to happen between the 15th and the 19th. I assume there won't be time for the staff to do anything more than cut and paste the constituency statements into the report and put some link in the report to the public comments. Is that the expectation, or is there going to be something more done beyond that?
Yeah, no, my expectation is exactly what you said, that there will be, the staff will incorporate the additional sort of factual record that has developed during the public comment period and the constituency statement period, and that those will be incorporated for so that we'll have another draft of the report that will include that. I think that sort of timeline reflects the timeline that's in the PDP, which, you know, doesn't call for us to do anything with the report after the public comments period concludes. But I guess my intent is
I don't think that's right. I think it actually calls for us to consider the public comments and make any changes in the report that are necessitated by the public comments.
Yeah, so I mean, we can talk about this offline. I don't think that's correct. But in any case, we've routinely ignored that particular strangeness in the PDP in the past, and I think it's, to the extent that it's true, I don't think it's very valuable to get public comments and then not do anything with them. So the intent is that we will have the opportunity for the staff to incorporate that into both the public comments and the constituency statements, and that we'll also have some further opportunity to refine proposals or consider, if we can get something that might reflect something closer to consensus view or modify the proposals to reflect some of the public comments that have been received. Does that answer your question?
Well, but you were agreeing with me as to what the staff would do, and then the task force would then consider over the next few weeks whether to make any changes in the report. Is that?
Yes, that's correct. So I would imagine that there would be some further evolution of what we're calling the final report between that what the staff prepares on the 19th and in our final publication.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments? So actually, given that there is a conflict with this, let me ask, how many people is the holiday on the 15th likely to affect their ability to participate in the call?
It actually increases my ability. It means there's no classes at school, so it doesn't affect...
it won't affect me either, even though I'm in the U.S.
It will probably affect me if Marilyn. But
it will affect David too.
It won't affect me. This is Robin.
So let me ask: Would people rather have that call on the 8th rather than the 15th? So either way, we're not going to have access to the public comments and so on by that time.
What would we do if we met on the 8th then?
We'll talk about our deliverables later on, but there's a couple of items I think that we have still some more work to do that aren't dependent on the public comment. For example, talking further about the access to data topic, as well as some of the other, Ross had proposed that we put together a set of success metrics. We can talk about, later in this call, I actually have an agenda item to talk about what our remaining sort of work items look like. But I would imagine there's a few of those that can be discussed without having a public comment.
Are you proposing to have two calls in 1 week, Jordan?
No, so I'm proposing to move the call from the 15th to the 8th.
Okay.
15th to the 8th.
So you're saying we wouldn't have any public comments on the 15th?
On the 15th, the public comment period will still be open at the time of our call, so it won't be. We won't be at the end of the public comment period. So I'm saying, in either case, we wouldn't be able to have a full consideration of the public comment, and the staff obviously wouldn't have had time to prepare the public.
Unfortunately had to drop off. I'm assuming we're not just seeing a repasting of the comments, but staff will need time to do an analysis of the comments, even though there is a deadline. So, because we certainly can all read what's pasted there, but so on the 8th, we'd be able to take into account from our own reading what's been posted.
Right. So what I'm proposing is that on either the 8th or the 15th, yes, we're free to do that ourselves, but I would actually propose that we put together a call agenda that doesn't have anything to do with the public comments. And that on the subsequent calls, starting on the 22nd, that we would start to talk about the input that we received from the public comments.
Then if we're not going to discuss the public comments, then the 8th would be not much different from the 15th as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So I guess I'm asking if it's more convenient if it would help people participate to be on the 8th.
That I would prefer that. This is Steve.
I'd prefer the 8th. It's Marilyn.
Okay, so why don't we do that then? Let's change the schedule slightly. So we'll have calls on the 8th, and then the 22nd, and as needed, we'll likely also have calls on the 29th and the 5th and the 12th of February. And the intent is on the 12th of February, we'll have a final task force vote and we'll publish the final report or transmit it to the city council. Okay, so that will be our schedule from now until task force concludes its work, hopefully. I'm going to move on to the second item in the agenda, which is a review and recap of the Sao Paulo activities. So there were two, I guess we had a brief sort of casual meeting with the CNSO Council, and there we discussed scheduling to a certain extent, and there wasn't really any substantive discussion of ideas, and that was intentional, given that we didn't have, not everyone from the task force was able to participate, and we had a limited amount of time. There were two other events that were probably more substantive. One is we had a rather lengthy public forum session where we had the opportunity to discuss both of the proposals, get some feedback from the public, and there was also a brief discussion of the staff's proposed procedure implementing the task force's previous policy on resolving conflicts with national laws. I think that people can probably read for themselves and comment to the staff if they have particular input on that. But in the public forum, I think there were a few ideas that struck me, and other people can comment if they had, if they noticed other things as well. But one question that was asked was, I think with regards to the OPOC proposal, whether there was some set of criteria or limitations on who could be an OPOC. And I think that's not currently incorporated into the proposal, but that's certainly something that might be an interesting concept for us to discuss to see if it helps. At least the commenter, I think, which was one of the DC reps to the council, if I'm not mistaken, pointed out that it might resolve some of the concerns with the OPOC proposal if there were some criteria or limitations on who the OPOC was or could be. And another point was made, I guess Bruce Tonkin came to the mic and made a proposal similar to one that I had made previously, which was sort of a tiered access model where it was fairly easy to get access to a full set of data just by contract and then having a further complete opt-out mode for those with special circumstances, essentially trying to combine some of the elements of the OPOC in the special circumstances proposal. Those are the two sort of comments that struck me. Either Maria or anyone else from the task force that was there, are there other comments that were received in the public comment period that anyone would like to call our attention to?
Jordan, there was, I just sent around a quick summary of some of the extra comments to the list. It picked up Bruce's proposal, and also we had a couple of questions on something that's out of scope, which was from Steve Del Bianco of the Net Choice Coalition, member of the BC. He wondered particularly about enforcement of policies that's out of scope of the task force, but it was just something else that came up. Jim Reed of Telnic talked about if there was a tiered access model that it would have, he thought, to be compliant with model contract clauses for data protection transfers outside of the EU or the safe harbor. And I think there was just one other one. There was Bob Hutchinson from Dynamic Ventures who wanted the WHOIS to be connected to information for shutting down websites that were problematic. Those are, and basically the rest of the discussion was to my mind, argumentation, you know, in favor and against the various proposals.
I'm sorry, would you, Maria, I'll go back and look at the captioning. Hutchinson suggested, I didn't That wasn't what I remembered he said, but I'll go back and look. You said he suggested information connecting who is to closing websites that are problematic. Did he say what problematic meant?
No, he didn't, but he brought it up in the context of an experience he had had with a website that was doing phishing. And so he basically said he wanted who is to connect to the proper legal authorities for shutting down a website such as that.
So I think I remember his point being essentially like, so I see all the, here's this various contact information, but it doesn't, you know, if there's some terrible attack going on, it doesn't actually help me, you know, get to the right people to turn off the attack. Particularly, it doesn't tell me which law enforcement agency might be responsible for investigating.
You know, this is, I want to thank whoever prepared that summary of the report, or the conversation, the public forum. It was very useful and very comprehensive, so that somebody like me who was not in Brazil got a very good sense of what was going on there. I have to say I'm concerned about your proposal and Bruce Tonkin's. It seems to me that what's happening here is we came up through a very long and arduous process with a definition of the purpose of who is, and that basically so much that's happened since then has completely disregarded that statement of purpose, and so that the people who are insisting that they want to have a different purpose for who is, namely to facilitate private law enforcement by intellectual property interests, are basically by stealth abandoning that purpose that we voted on and approved, and insisting that how we reform who is be structured in various ways that are designed to fulfill different purposes from the ones we agreed on. So what's up with that, Jordan?
So I'm going to try to avoid getting in the weeds of the conversation of the merits of the proposals at this point, just because I want to make sure that we are getting through our agenda. But, you know,
More of a process point. I mean, did the vote that we had on purpose, was that completely meaningless? Did we abandon it? Did we have a vote to abandon it? Or does it in some way structure what we're doing now? What proposals are in order and what are out of order?
So I think it should still certainly inform our ongoing work. And I think to the extent that people think that various proposals are not consistent with the purpose of the WIS that we've been asked to work under, that should certainly form their propensity to support them or not.
Jordan, but it's Marilyn, but I might call everyone's attention to the council's resolution as well. And Maria may want to repost that to the task force, because I believe the council resolution suggested that the task force should be informed by and that it would be the council that would come back and reconsider whether any changes would need to be made in the purpose definition.
Yeah, so this is, we're getting far afield of where I actually want our discussion to be today. So,
well, let me tell me where you want it to be.
So I want it to be on recapping the discussion right now. I want it to be recapping the discussion and activities from Sao Paulo.
Okay. So as I understand it, the big thing as far as you're concerned was that there's these ideas about tiered access that are floating around. Now, I guess I want to know, is that in scope for this? Can we finish the OPOC business and then talk about tiered access?
We'll talk about proposals in just a minute and how we're going to treat them. My general thought is that unless proposals stand to get us substantially closer to some sort of consensus within the task force, that they're unlikely to feature prominently in our ongoing discussion. Go ahead. Is that Aubrey?
Yeah. I just wanted to add that in the context of recapping the discussion, as Maria said, what she posted was the new comments. What Milton has actually been bringing up, even though he wasn't there, is some of the points that those of us who were there actually did get up and say at the microphone. It's just that, as Maria said, she was just presenting the new stuff and not all the things we said in terms of, you know, support of the various proposals. but what Milton said did fit into the general rubric of recap of the discussion.
Fair enough. I just don't want to get into
a lengthy
discussion about the merits of the council proposal and what they decided. Okay, any other questions or comments about the discussion at the public forum? And I do agree with Milton that it's very helpful to have the staff, I guess that was you, Maria, to prepare a synopsis of comments.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move on to recapping the discussion with the GAC. I was not there for the discussion with the GAC, so can someone volunteer to perhaps recap that conversation for those of us that weren't there? And I don't think was that conversation transcribed anywhere, or are we forced to go based on individual notes that were taken?
Notes.
Yeah. So does anyone want to volunteer to maybe try to give the task force members that weren't there a sense of that conversation?
Jordan's Maria, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to dig up some of the notes I took on it. I'll just be a sec.
Sure.
Hi, this is Steve. I was present for the conversation. It wasn't a very long conversation because most of the time with the GAC was spent on the new GTLD issue. But as you know, the GAC didn't reach an agreement on its statement of who is principals in Sao Paulo. And there was some discussion from the French delegate to the GAC about his approach to this question, which I would hesitate to summarize because it was pretty complex. I don't think there was any real presentation of different positions per se in discussion.
Can I add something, Aubrey?
Yeah, go ahead, Aubrey.
Yeah, I think, I tend to agree with what you said there, is that one of the things that was most characteristic, I think, about the discussion, when we did start dipping into little things like distinguishing between individuals and commercials or whatever, is how incredibly complex the discussion that's facing the GAC is, and how, I'll be really interested to see at what level they can come to agreement on this, because the discussion, once you get into the various national laws and what's permitted and what's not permitted and who's commercial and who's not commercial, is incredibly complicated. And that was one thing that I think I picked up from that, is that the complexity is actually overwhelming in terms of national law when you start looking at it.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Okay, I've found my notes. I can give just a very short preview of the part I was there for, if that's helpful.
Thanks,
Suzanne Sen started with she gave some background, basically said that working intersessionally is helpful, but it's not, that there's no substitute for physical meetings. That there's no substitute for physical meetings, and that there are many different legal perspectives to be reconciled. Then the French delegate talked about the two perspectives on who is, one saying that the various broad uses of it are illegal, and that there are discrepancies between the legislation and concerns about misuses of data. And then he said the second line of thought was that access to data is not a good thing, and there need to be some restrictions. His take on it was that the technical modalities for access changed the issue. So he seemed to be talking about the amount of data that's actually available for access is quite important. He drew a distinction between, say, bulk access to the WHOIS versus information that's publicly available but in a filing cabinet. And so he said that what he described as shaded access through technical access is a way forward. So I think he seemed to be talking about tiered access of some kind there. Then there was a Brazilian speaker. They pointed out that when they are talking about restriction of data, that their constitution provides for freedom of expression but not anonymity. So from a constitutional point of view, for them, they have to have access to data about who is providing
information and the services on the internet, and they also said that international legislation like the European Convention, the Council of Europe Convention on Cybercrime should be taken into advantage, or into view. And then just wrapping up really, Suzanne Sen again, she said towards the end that it would be useful to have information about how many domain names are used privately and are used commercially in different countries, because it's easier then to say which law a person is covered by. And but she did add that it was hard to extrapolate that to the GTLD level. She also said the absence of data is a challenge, so I think she meant inaccurate and absent data, but that a broader understanding of the characteristics of domain name registrants in the broader GTLD marketplace would be very helpful. And then I think finally there was some discussion about possible joint work at the Lisbon meeting on the Saturday and Sunday before the ICANN meeting kicks off. That was a more practical point towards the end.
Great, thanks. Maria? Okay, any questions or comments about the GAC discussion?
It's Marilyn. I'll just make a comment about Bertrand de la Chapelle's comment. I did speak to him about what he meant later in that rather elaborate and useful analogy about data that is in filing cabinets, but it's difficult to mine it. I'm not sure he was talking about tiered access as much as talking about safeguards to prevent data mining. But you might email him and ask him.
Sure, absolutely. I'll read the tea leaves while I'm at it as well.
This is Milton.
Yeah, go ahead, Milton.
Like to say that it did not surprise me one bit to learn that the GAC could not agree on policy principles for the who is, and I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's simply if the GAC is unable to give consistent advice, and of course it is just an advisory body, that we simply go ahead and do our work, and the board has to deal with the conflicting signals when it makes a decision. I think there's a tendency to think of kind of an inevitable tendency to think of this task force as really being the one-stop shop where all the work gets done, but in fact all we're doing is passing a report up to the council, which then votes and has something that it passes on to the board, which has a history of not exactly taking our work as the Bible. So I think we needn't be deterred by the GAC's inability to come to an agreement. This is why ICANN was created in the first place, was that territorial jurisdictions conflict. So I think that pretty much settles that. I don't think we should bend our schedules or go out of our way to be held up by the fact that the GAC can't agree.
Yeah, so I tend to agree that we've got to stick with our schedule regardless of whether or not the GAC has the ability to put together some sort of communication to us. I think individual governments are obviously welcome to comment and participate in the process from the public comment perspective, or other ways of contacting various task force members and so on, and there are the additional layers of consideration beyond task force work, which are actually probably, from a formal perspective, where the bylaws would probably imagine that communication would technically take place, although we're obviously welcome any input that the GAC might or government members might give the task force to help frame our work. Any other questions or comments about the meeting with the GAC in Sao Paulo? Okay. I'm going to move right along then. And finally, any other questions or comments about anything else that happened in Sao Paulo other than these two meetings that we've discussed previously? Hope there weren't other Who Is related things. I'm aware of them.
Jordan, this is Steve.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just thought it's worth mentioning that in the public forum, in the presentation regarding OPOC, there was some discussion about the, I guess it's one of our unfinished business items about access to the data that is not made public. And I thought it was interesting that Ross in his presentation said that until that issue of how people would, as he put it, the right access for the right people is a very important question. And he said, certainly the position of my constituency, unless that question could be substantively answered, it's very difficult for us to support any of these proposals. I think the discussion did shed some light on the need to address that issue, really, regardless of which, you know, even if you assume that one or the other proposals is ultimately adopted, that issue of access to data, the right access for the right people, as Ross put it, is a very important question. So I just wanted to underscore that because I think that did come out in the discussion at the public forum.
Yeah, I think that's right. We're actually, under our terms of reference, we're obligated to answer that question. So it is an important question that we need to address before submitting our final report.
But I don't necessarily agree that there's any need for us to do anything about that before we pass the OPOC proposal. For example, there are all kinds of procedures going on now by which law enforcement agencies request information from registrars, as Ross himself has made a point of stating that they constantly are in cooperation with law enforcement. And most governments have established procedures for requesting information from ISPs. So I don't see why we couldn't go ahead with the OPOC proposal without changing anything. We certainly want to address that issue, but the idea that we have to come up with some massive new bureaucracy to decide who in Turkey is a local or national law enforcement authority strikes me as opening up a path for another 2 or 3 years of work, which of course is probably what some people want, but not me.
So I think you're correct, Milton, that a conceivable answer to the question is, you know, how do people get access to data that's not published, is that they use the same mechanisms that they have available to them today to get access to other data that's not published. But I think you're also right that we do need to at least address the issue and make it clear that we considered it and what we believe the answer ought to be. Yep. But it doesn't necessarily imply the creation of unique policy to address that particular thing. Although I do agree with Steve, it is a point that aroused a substantial level of conversation, so it is important that we consider whether there are our policy approaches that would allow us to address. I don't want to either be dismissive of your approach of saying that there's a lot of tools already available. I also don't want to be dismissive of the idea that we might find some reasonable approach to the access question that might make the world a better place. Okay, so I'm gonna move on to our third agenda item for today, which is a brief discussion of new proposals to the task force. I'm going to actually start with a meta item, which is how we're going to treat the idea of new proposals to the task force. Here's what I have in mind, and people are certainly welcome to give further input, but my general idea is that if there are additional proposals, including the one that Aubrey submitted, and I guess Marilyn indicates she has something that might one day turn into a proposal, but is just some ideas right now as part of the public comment process. In any case, any further proposals, I think to the extent that people make proposals that are useful in allowing the task force to get closer to consensus or allow us to actually get a position that would be a clear task force sort of set of policy recommendations, I think that it would be a mistake not to strongly consider any such proposal and try to actually make it work. Having said that, I think in most cases, I think that we'll get a lot of ideas, and I think that to a large extent, people have pretty strong opinions about the existing approaches that we've already seen in the OPOC proposal and the special circumstances proposal. So if something can't do better than one of those two proposals in terms of attracting a strong sort of consensus-based support, then I don't want to spend a whole lot of our precious remaining time entrenched in conversation about them. I'm glad to add them to the report, and I'm glad to allow sort of a very brief amount of discussion to make sure we understand the proposals and see if they do help us get closer to consensus-based positions. But I don't think that I think that it's very unlikely we'll succeed in completing our work if each new proposal is added, we have a substantial additional new set of conversations around. So the general intent would be allow a brief introduction, have a equally brief discussion of whether or not the proposal or something like it will help us get to a consensus position. And if not, then I would propose that we add the proposal to the report and simply note its existence and move on with our discussions of, as Milton put earlier, trying to nail down the OPOC and some of the work that we're already doing. Any questions or comments about that approach?
Jordan, this is Steve. I mean, it strikes me that we've put forward two possible proposals, and of course, in the public comment period, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of other proposals. Some, well formulated and well thought out, and some of them perhaps not. But I'm sure we'll get a lot of other proposals. And I guess that was kind of my original question about what we're going to do with what comes in the public comment period. Was sort of directed to that. It strikes me that, for example, the proposal for Mavri and Wendy and Robin is certainly something that could be raised in the public comment period and that we ought to take a look at that point. I'm just not sure what, when you say we'll incorporate it in the report, does that mean that we kind of privilege the later proposals that come in from other task force members as more worthy than later proposals that might come in from members of the public, or that we might not incorporate in our report?
Well,
I'm not sure what the distinction is.
Yeah, clearly any proposal that's made as part of the public comment period will become part of the report in that the public comment period is all included in the report, or the public comments will all be included in the report. As for whether we would sort of quote unquote privilege reports made by task and proposals made by task members more than those made by random members of the public, I think I am inclined to do so, just in that that's inherently what we have been doing all along. We consider this within the context of our discussions. We've generally been considering proposals made by task force members somewhat more earnestly than we have.
Hello, this is Aubrey. Can I comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay, good. I've been trying before, but I was muted. One, I pretty much agreed with your take on how one should approach it, although I think it's also part of not only bringing consensus, but understanding where the consensus point lies. And I think that that's been when one of the problems that we've had is that we had a middle consensus point, but because there wasn't a proposal showing the full range of views, that middle consensus point was looking like an edge position. So I think if it's in there as understanding what the consensus point is, I think it's there. I also am very appreciative of being able to talk through the new proposals to include them in the report. And I believe that even in proposals that are seen as edge proposals at the moment, there may be points that amplify and help flesh out the consensus proposals. For example, I mean, just on talking about the whole issue of access to, unpublished data.
Yeah, so I think I mean, I certainly think you're right that we may get wisdom from unexpected places, including proposals that we might not otherwise seriously consider as a whole, or proposals or comments from the public that might initially seem strange. We might eventually find that there's useful nuggets contained within them. I think that just to try to answer Steve's initial question. So my point is still, I think that we would probably take somewhat more notice of proposals made by task force members as opposed to public comments. But I think we should consider all of them with the intent of trying to find if there are policy positions there that would be helpful in helping us get closer to consensus. So we will take a look at all the proposals that are made. With that in mind, and if there are proposals that are made in the public comment period that seem particularly noteworthy, it may make sense to incorporate those in some special way as well. Other questions or comments about this? Okay, so that sounds like I'm not hearing any objection to the general approach, which is that we'll try to spend the minimal amount of time with new proposals to assess, to understand what they are and assess whether they help us get to the point of consensus. We certainly will do that, take that same exercise for that are made as part of the public comment period, and we'll note the existence of these various other proposals that are made, but unless they help advance us closer to consensus, we'll probably won't spend a significant in the task force. So with that in mind, though, I do want to spend a brief amount of time on this call discussing Aubrey's proposal, just so we can understand the answer to those two questions I'd raised, A, what it is, and B, whether it helps us get closer to consensus. So I might ask that we spend about maybe have Aubrey introduce it for a few minutes and then have a few minutes of discussion afterwards whether or not it does help us get closer to consensus.
And Jordan, when would you be planning on doing that for what I submitted?
Well, right, so I actually don't know how you want to treat that, Marilyn. We could do it today, or we could, if you think that your thing is not yet a proposal and would like to defer that conversation until later on, I'd be glad to do that as well.
Okay.
That's entirely up to you is the bottom
line.
Yeah,
I think for ease of the task force, I can do the part that I would turn into a proposal fairly equally. It will only be three main points with other things kind of being improvements. So why don't you see if that works out today, and if not, I'll reorganize it.
Okay, I think we should have time today, unless the discussion of Aubrey's proposal ends up being substantially longer than I'm expecting. But Aubrey, could you maybe start us off with just an overview for a couple of minutes, just describing?
Certainly, and as I wanted to reiterate, while I'm taking the lead on talking, it's really Robin, Wendy, and my proposal. So anyhow, if it stems from, first of all, recognizing the purpose of who is, as was stated, which was the technical and operational purpose of being able to reach someone who can do something authoritative about the entry. And basically, when you come down to it, that information, that authoritative information, is the person who is responsible for the DNS entry. So none of the information that's currently contained in there gives that. In fact, by and large, if you want that authoritative information, you use a tool like Dig or whomever to find out where the authoritative entry for the DNS, for the name, is. So recognizing that, recognizing also that the complexity of the overlaid purposes that are not part of the purpose of who is, but are the overlaid purposes, are far too complex for who is as a tool, and therefore need to be avoided. Recognizing that we cannot come up with an operational enforcement plan for reliability. So even when you have information in who is, it's really relatively useless because it is not reliable information. It just is the information that happens to be there. The proposal basically comes in two points. One is that the requirements for who is should actually be eliminated from the registrar registry's requirements because the tool no longer functions to fulfill the purpose. It is basically operationally broken. It's not technically broken, but it's operationally broken. However, I'm not quite sure that that recommendation is within the purview of the Who Is Task Force, and so there's a secondary that basically says, if removing Who is not within our purview, is not one of the recommendations we can make, then we should at least restrict it to what is its stated purpose, what is its historical purpose, which is how can you get access to the DNS authority who can, in fact, bring down a website that is problematic. Where can you go? And this is one of the most important purposes, you know, overlay purposes I was hearing, other than it's broken, it's causing problems with the stability and security of the Internet because it's putting out bad data. One of the other overlays is that we have a website that needs to come down because it's doing evil things for some definition of evil things. And the only way to do that is to have the authoritative DNS authority, the person or authority who's responsible for the DNS entry, so that Who Is data would be restricted to that authoritative information. The same information you can get from Dig or the other tools, but, you know, put into Who Is. So that's the basic proposal, that Who Is, if it is not removed as a required tool, which it should be because it no longer serves its purpose, should be confined to the DNS authority. I don't know if any of the other you know, co-authors want to add anything to my quick overview.
Yes, so Robin or Wendy? That is, they don't want to add anything to your overview.
Sorry, I was muted, but yeah, I think Avery gives an overview that gets into what we want to discuss, which is does what we have now is the purpose that we've identified, and if not, let's eliminate all of that crap from the agreements clean up what's happening, or clean up what I can require.
One other thing I wanted to add that the proposal does include is, in response to the whole notion of how does law enforcement and others gain access to, you know, unpublished information. Obviously, the registrars have all the information that law enforcement and others need. And the recommendation there is to basically publish a best practices of what is done today to basically give an effective access to that information to people. And if, you know, as I said, if there are further requirements for that, then let's understand those requirements and figure out what the proper practices would be to satisfy those, but not overlay them on what's essentially an operationally broken tool.
Hi, this is Robin. I just wanted to underscore the idea that the proposal is designed to build upon the work that the task force has already done, and particularly build upon the decision that the GNSO made at the Wellington meeting on the narrow technical purpose of Who Is. So the idea is to try to take some of the decisions that we've made and actually put them in place in ICANN policies.
Okay. Thanks. So are there questions for this? I'll start with questions of clarification. Okay, I have a question of clarification. So Aubrey, you're suggesting that that you think, am I correct in understanding you think that even just the second half of your proposal, which would be basically, as I understand it, just include some technical contact information for the DNS administrator, that seems consistent with a fairly narrow reading of the definition of purpose. Is your what is the how do you reconcile the idea of having no who is at all, and how does that reconcile with the definition of the purpose that says that there should be some way to contact someone who's responsible for the DNS records?
I mean, basically, because the authoritative information, the information that registrars and registries need in order to deal with broken DNS is not obtained but through whois, is obtained through DIG, basically looking at authoritative records. So if it's in our purview to sort of say, you know, the purpose of whois was given as this technical operational purpose, a strict reading of that says that basically whois does not provide that information, and even an OPOC doesn't give an authoritative information, and that the authoritative information is already held by the registrars and is obtained by other tools. The second half of it, it says, but if getting rid of whois is too difficult a step because of its symbolic importance and the fact that it's a tool built into many users and others' ways of thinking, then it should include that same authoritative information that one that the registrars can get using DIG.
So I actually don't understand what. So if the purpose is to contact a person, how does DIG help me do that? Because DIG gives me a bunch of technical data about a zone, but it doesn't tell me who or what person is responsible for it.
I actually believe that calling for the correct records in DIG does give you all the information that a registrar needs to cure a problem and to find the authoritative person that can deal with the DNS record.
So are we assuming that the whoever's trying to resolve this problem has access to, like, IP whois data? Because in and of itself, like, I guess DIG, like, we could get an email address out of the SOA record, but generally there's not a lot of, contactability information in the zone file.
Yeah, but you do get the information that is authoritatively available.
About the authoritative available about the website or about the person? I didn't understand that.
About the website. About the name that's registered. I mean, whois is not about websites. It's about DNS entry.
Right. So that's true. I mean, maybe we should take this offline, but I actually don't quite understand what contact information extracts using DIG or zone data information, other than there's one email address that's encoded in it.
Which is an authoritative email address.
Maybe. It tends to be something like hostmaster at domain name. Okay. Other questions or clarification about this proposal?
Yeah, it's Marilyn. I didn't. One thing, the proposal that's distributed doesn't actually have the authors' names on it. Is it going?
Okay. Yeah. Well, it was sent. I mean, the author's name. You're right. It was probably an omission from the file itself. It was certainly in the email that accompanied it. It included my name, Wendy's name, and Robin's name as the listed authors.
Okay. So my question would be to any of the three of you. I wasn't quite clear, Aubrey, when you were saying. I'm just looking at the policy implications. Is that? And there are some things, there are some assumptions in it that I think maybe I may have a different interpretation of what ICANN's responsibilities are. But my question is really about the policy implications, of which three choices, are these supposed to be related to each other, or are they separable?
I believe they're related to each other.
So it suggests that ICANN should waive the Who Is publication requirements for the GTLD registries and registrars.
Yeah.
And if it cannot be waived, then they should be limited to only publishing the contact information for the purpose or entity responsible for managing the authoritative DNS server. What would that what do you have a sense of what the details are that would be in that contact information?
That could very well be, you know, more information than an email. It could be the name and you know, other contact information. It could be similar information to what we're talking about in the OPOC, but it's not some general OPOC, which, you know, is has yet to be defined, although, you know, it's basically the contact information for the authority. The person or entity, if it's a company that's doing it, that can be held responsible for that DNS entry, for removing it from the DNS if that's what needs to happen.
So I guess that could be a phone number or an email address or
a postal address.
Some services I've seen before had this notion of what's called a zone administrator or the zone contact, and that would be the person responsible for the information in the zone file. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Essentially, yes.
Would be, yeah.
Yeah, and as I say, I believe you can get that level of information through DIG also, giving the right arguments, but I'd have to prove that to you. But certainly the 1A on the proposal is, yes, you would list that in Who Is.
It would probably be roughly analogous to things that we're more used to something like a technical contact in the current list.
Right, but a real technical contact.
Right. So
right, someone who can actually touch the DNS, you know, the entry, and if the problem is that it needs to be stopped because it's doing something problematic, it's the person that can do it.
So it's the person that's capable of resolving technical issues.
Right.
With the...
Yes, precisely. The person who's capable of causing a name not to resolve or to resolve elsewhere to clear up any technical issues that the domain name might be causing.
And did you, when Aubrey, when you say a real technical contact, so does this assume that that the data would be, that this would be accurate data and the person would actually have been, you know, right now, I can put any name in that section. Does this proposal assume that the contact details will be validated in some way so it's accurate?
They should theoretically be the same ones you get from DIG.
The proposal doesn't address whether there should be extra validations of the contact of name servers any more than there is now.
But as I say, I mean, if the information is correct, it's the same information that you would get back from other methods.
I think I'm gathering from Wendy, though, it's silent on whether or not there should be additional...
Yeah, there's no enforcement. I mean, ICANN is not, it's not an enforcement. But as I say, you can do a verification by simply checking the information in two different ways. And it should resolve similarly.
Hey, Marilyn, does that answer your question?
Parts of my questions. On two, the proposal is simultaneously, I'm just reading this, so ICANN should undertake to create a study of, does this say what it, were you thinking what its role is? Is that when you said a study of where it might best contribute?
Essentially, yes. There's a lot of requirements that are sort of in the ether at the moment in terms of information that may or may not be needed. So, yes. So what needs to be done? Let's understand the full requirements of beyond the technical purposes, what needs to be done.
Well, this says a study of where it might contribute to coordinate the network management activities of registration interest. Should I read that to mean registries and registrars or registrants? Or all three? Or only one?
At this point, I would basically say in general all three.
All three. And then network operators. And in network operators, that would mean ISPs and connectivity providers? Is that who we're going to be studying?
I mean, basically, we're going to be studying the requirements of all for the best practices and the information. Yes, I mean, basically, everybody is doing some part of it at the moment, and everybody is sort of contributing to either the collection of information or the dissemination of information. So, you know, it's so ICANN has to figure out where it fits in doing any of this. It fits somewhere, but you know, the goal is, as it says in the second paragraph, the goal is how you deal with emergency response, how you deal with technical abuse prevention, how it's coordinated, you know, how the overall interests of everyone are appropriately protected. And so at the moment, as I say, the melange of methods and needs and requirements and complexities are not well understood. And we're all coming in from various national perspectives, from various technical and operational perspectives, with different viewpoints. So at this point, and we have different ideas about what ICANN is responsible for. And all of this is at the moment in basically a disorganized state of understanding. And so the recommendation is that ICANN should undertake a study of how it can coordinate all of these activities and all of these requirements.
Aubrey.
Yeah.
Milton, can I do a quick time check real quick here?
Yeah, okay.
So Marilyn, I think actually we're probably not, in order to give you adequate time to explain your proposal and have discussion around it, I'm going to suggest that we actually defer that conversation until our next call on the 8th. Is that all right with you?
That's fine, and I'll reorganize this so people can see what part of it would be a proposal more clearly.
Great, and I think we need at least about 10 minutes at the end of this call to discuss our remaining sort of work items. So I want to make sure that we're going to have about a limit of 10 more minutes on this topic. So with that in mind, go ahead, Milton.
Okay. Just wanted to point out, Aubrey, that this proposal does not in any way prevent national governments, as, for example, currently happens in Germany, from requiring website owners to publish their contact information.
No, not at all. I mean, the whole point here is that those requirements vary country by country and perhaps even within a country, region by region. And therefore, no. I mean, national law or regional law or local law is what it is, and the registrars within those countries, within those regions, have to comply with that. And if the law says you must publish, like Brazil was indicating, you must publish the name of the owner of the site, then, you know, there's nothing ICANN has to say about that. What ICANN, what it's saying is that ICANN shouldn't be the one trying to create the basic international law on the information that must be there. That is something that you know, I mean, that's really a national interest. That requirement is one of those things that nations consider sovereign. And if the sovereign interests of the state are such that there is no anonymity, while I may not like it, that's the requirement of living and doing business in that country.
So I just have one final.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are 2 and 3 then related to each other? That is, you would need to do 2 before you do 3? Or were you suggesting that those could be done in parallel?
I would suggest those can be done in parallel, but basically registrars throughout the world are already, you know, this is something that Ross has spoken of often. They're already doing this, and Bruce has spoken of it. They're already doing this. They're already dealing with specific national law, specific requirements. They've got best practices, and so basically, let's start collecting those. Let's start understanding what's already done, what already works, what's already beyond the who is tool in terms of doing all this. In other words, you know, we've been focusing on who is as the hammer for all, you know, jobs. It's the tool that does everything. Whereas in reality, there's an amazing amount of diversity in practices that registrars have with their local authorities, and that those may actually do a better job of guiding what should be done with a new registrant in a new country or some other place than trying to force fit it all into who is, which is operationally and technically not a qualified tool.
Okay, any other questions for Aubrey? For the last couple of minutes on this topic for the proposal, I want to solicit feedback as to are there things in this proposal that help us get closer to consensus? I want to see if this proposal meets that threshold for possibly engaging in some further discussion on it.
Are you asking me or someone else?
I'm asking everyone.
Okay.
I would just say, from my point of view, a proposal like this makes me much more willing to get, to take measures that would affect the accuracy of information that is collected at the time of registration.
Right. So actually, accuracy of information as it's collected, actually, just like the collection of data, is mostly out of scope of this. Because the terms of reference that we've been asked to look at is how we deal with responses to complaints about inaccurate information.
Oh, okay. So we're not doing anything to increase the accuracy in this task force?
Jordan,
Well, so if there's a complaint about accuracy, it's well within scope to figure out how to make sure that the information gets make sure that process works well and that we end up with accurate information.
Jordan, it's Marilyn. I'm not sure I am interpreting that element of the TOR exactly the way you are. You're suggesting that that preventing inaccuracy. What's the difference really between a phrase that says improving accuracy? Because preventing inaccuracy is a way to improve accuracy.
So I actually don't. I'm going to pull it up really quickly. I actually don't think that the terms of reference actually says that the goal of that item is to improve accuracy, is to improve the process for responding to complaints of inaccuracy.
But the task force could, I think, legitimately in its feedback say to the council that one way to deal with this would be to limit the amount of inaccurate data.
So I don't necessarily disagree that if we end up with sort of edge, it's stuff that relates strongly to one of our terms of reference items but is maybe sort of marginal or may even be clearly out of our scope that would help us get to the place we need to be on the stuff that is clearly within our scope.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't have a problem making a recommendation along those lines and then including a note basically saying, so even though this wasn't explicitly within our scope, we thought it was helpful to, you know, conduct our work, yada, yada, yada. And if the council wanted to pare back what we did to bring us back in scope, they'd certainly be welcome to do so. But for the purpose of at least managing discussion, I think that I don't want to get, unless it really helps us get closer to consensus, I don't want to have a huge amount of discussion about stuff that seems to be out of the scope of the terms of reference.
And if I can add where I think this helps on consensus, one of them is I think it as I said earlier, it shows us the full range of possibilities and may help us better understand what the consensus point is within the task force. And two, I think that, you know, the study of what ICANN's role should be in all of this, and the work to basically document the best practices are hopefully things that can, you know, be consensually, can help us with understanding the consensus point.
Right. So I think actually that's somewhat, Marilyn in her proposal had something, I'm not sure it's the same, but a similar sort of notion of doing some, having ICANN do some further study of some topics. That may be an area where that some consensus could be built, although obviously that would be as a follow-on activity to the task force work. Any other thoughts about this? So Milton suggested one way this might help us achieve consensus. Are there other thoughts about whether this proposal moves us closer to consensus?
Well, you know, Wendy, I'd suggest that by setting sort of a minimal level of ICANN involvement, it helps us to either decide that we want ICANN to be more of a regulator or we want ICANN to be less of a regulator. But this sets out sort of a poll where ICANN could do very little and I think still be consistent with what council has decided to determine the purpose of who is. So to spark discussion of if ICANN should do more than this, why should it do more? What are the compelling reasons for making everyone who does business with ICANN have to comply with more onerous regulations?
Okay, so I think what I'm hearing actually, Wendy, from both you and Aubrey is that you think this proposal is helpful primarily as helping to frame some of our other conversation and help us think about some of the concepts in our ongoing discussion.
I think it's useful as a reference point. It's a reference point that I myself would adopt, but I think for those who wouldn't adopt it, I would very much like to hear in the discussion why they think something more than this is justified.
Okay. Okay, well, so with the time limit I've imposed, actually, we're just about out of time on this. I think I'd welcome further thoughts, or if people do think there are ways this might help us get closer to consensus, I'd welcome them on the list or in further conversation. But I do want to save our last 10 minutes to talk briefly about our last agenda item, which is to make sure that we understand the remaining work that we have ahead of us and the areas in which we need, in which there's clearly identified some additional work that needs to be done. And I think coming out of the conversation in Sao Paulo, we identified three areas. One is the access to data topic, which we touched on a couple of times today. I think I'm going to propose at a minimum that our next call have a substantial amount of time devoted to this along with Marilyn's proposal. In fact, I think that's probably what I'll propose as the entire agenda for that call. The second area was what to do, what happens when the OPOC is contacted. And I guess this might actually relate to the point that I raised from the public comment period, which is should there be any requirements or someone suggested to me in the hallway that maybe there's a notion of a accreditation process for OPOCs or something. Should there be requirements for OPOC behavior when some sort of notice is received? And that obviously relates specifically to the OPOC. And then the last area that Ross had proposed in our last metric, and I think makes some sense, but we can probably handle fairly briefly, is what should we define as success metrics so that once a policy is adopted, it can be evaluated periodically. The staff can perhaps do a report from time to time evaluating progress compared to some success metrics. That, I think, actually will be a little bit hard to do until we're somewhat closer to the final report. So I'm going to suggest that we defer that last topic until relatively late in our process. But are there other, I'll ask if people have comments on those specific areas or if there are other areas that people think we need to do some additional work in that aren't included there, because what I'm trying to do, what we'll try to do is build a schedule of activities scheduled based around resolving each of those topics. Okay, so based on the incredible silence, I am assuming that people agree that those are the right topics for us to spend the rest of our time on, along with obviously reacting to the public comments, but to resolve those three issues as well as reacting to the public comment, or essentially, and then also discussing Marilyn's proposal and anything else that may come up. Essentially, that's going to be the definition of our of the work that we're going to do from this point on. Hey, I guess I didn't need 10 minutes for this conversation. Okay, well, I'm going to assume that we are going to use those areas for the remainder of our topic, remainder of our work. As I just indicated a minute ago, our next call on January 8th, I think, will devote primarily to the access to data topic. It does seem to be one of the critical topics that we haven't yet resolved. We've got a few proposals. I'll resend them out to the list, the discussion that we've had so far. And then we'll also discuss the first thing on the agenda on the next call will be Marilyn's proposal, which I'm expecting that she's going to flesh out a little bit before then. And then these other two topics we'll schedule some time for a little bit later in the process, although I would like to get to what the OPAC does relatively early. So we may split the time between the public comments and that on the call on the 20th, or the call on the, 20 seconds. Okay, last chance for any other comments or questions about remaining work items.
I'll just give my advance apologies that I won't be able to make the bulk of remaining calls because my teaching schedule has shifted.
We will take note of that and be disappointed not to have you on our call. Any other last-minute questions or comments about this? Otherwise, I will wrap up the call and we'll resume on the 8th of January with the agenda to discuss Marilyn's proposal as well as the access to data.
Jordan, are there going to be any specific proposals, documents sent to us about the access to data, the tiered access issue?
Yeah, so there already are. There's five, I think, ideas that have been that are represented in the current preliminary report. I'll make sure they get resent to everyone, and if people have further ideas on the access to data topic, they're welcome to submit their ideas between now and then. But the five ideas that already exist probably are a useful starting point for our conversation.
Okay. You might just bullet point them and send them out in a note.
I was trying to say that. We'll certainly do that before the call.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, we'll draw this call to a close, and we'll speak with you all again on the 8th of January.
Thanks. Happy New Year to everybody.
Very happy holiday season and New Year.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, happy holidays, everyone.
Bye-bye.